Hello, and welcome to the So What podcast, in which political economic analyst JP Lantman discusses the issues uppermost in the minds of South Africans. You can find a written version of this content on JP's website, jplantman.co.za. I am Ruda Lantman, and I am your host. This podcast goes with JP's newsletter, dated the 14th of October, 2025, and the title is Project Vulindlela. But before we come to that, JP, it's been a while. Why the silence since, what is it, July?
Yes, we must apologize to our readers and regular listeners for the long period of silence. Basically, two reasons. I fell ill with pneumonia and couldn't shake it. That dragged on and dragged on. And then I've been very busy. And between those two impediments, I couldn't do the kind of deep research that I like to do when I do the compile the notes. So that's what happened. My apologies, but we're all healthy now and happy and going on. And here we are with the next episode talking about Vulindlela.
Well, there was also food poisoning while you were on the road, poor thing.
Yes, I was doing a road show and developed food poisoning, and that was extremely uncomfortable. So yes, all these things contributed. But fortunately, that's now behind us.
So why Project Vulindlela? It's been going for a while. Why do you want to focus on it now?
Well, in one of the roadshows I did in the last couple of weeks, we went around the country and spoke to about 9 or 10 business audiences. And I underlined the fact that they were business audiences. And in each of those meetings, I asked the audience members, do you know about Project Vulindlela? Do you know what it is? And to my shock and horror and amazement, very, very few people knew about it. In fact, there were two of the towns and cities in which we were where nobody in the audience have heard about Vulindlela. And that made me realize that it is such an important program. And that made me realize that the ordinary business people out there do not have, shall I say, sufficient knowledge of what's going on. Why is Vulindlela important? It is the most meaningful economic program by the government, economic policy program by the government, since 1996 when the GEAR program was launched. Since then, we've had many economic programs. We've had Asgisa. We had the new economy plan. In Zuma's time, there was the 9-point plan. Then there was the national development plan. And lately, in the last few weeks, the ANC has released the 10-point economic plan. None of them are as comprehensive and as focused on implementation. That's really the point, as focused on implementation as the Vulindlela project. And I thought it's important that we talk about it.
You go back to 2019 to find the origin.
Absolutely. In 2019, October 2019, it's now 6 years ago, the then Minister of Finance, Tito Mboweni, released an innocent-looking document from the National Treasury, about 62, 63 pages, outlining changes that have to happen in the economy, structural change that must come in various areas. There was a huge hullabaloo. The document was condemned by some people as a sop to new liberalism. It was condemned by others as a rogue document. Somebody said Treasury has gone rogue. There was a huge reaction. A month later, Tito Mboweni went to the National Executive Committee of the ANC, and he apologized that he released this document before it was discussed internally by the ANC. So clearly he believed that it's better to ask forgiveness later than to ask permission up front. So that's the background. That was in 2019.
Sorry, but why? Why were people so shocked? What was in the document that was so different?
As you will see when we go through the detail, what it basically entailed is that room must be made for the private sector. That's the big organizing principle, if you pull it through. Room must be made for the private sector to come into areas where traditionally there has been government monopolies, like energy, for example, like logistics, like water. And with that, the private sector must also bring in capital and management expertise. And that was quite an important Rubicon line for many people in the ANC.
hard for the ANC to make that shift.
For some of them, yes, absolutely. Clearly not for Mboweni, and also not for the government, because what happened in 2020, we got COVID, the country went into a lockdown. But then in October 2020, a year after this rogue document was released, government released an economic reform and recovery program to recover from COVID. And that program was basically premised on the document released by Titi Mboweni, on the rogue document. And from then on, that became official government policy, basically from October 2020. And it was in the SONA, presidential SONA of February 21, where Ramaphosa just slipped in a little sentence in the speech to say that this document is now official government policy. And from there on, we had Vulindlela.
What are the focus areas?
There are five of them. It is electricity, spectrum release and digital communication, water, freight transport, that is railways and ports, and number five, visa and skilled migration. Now, you must remember this, we now talk about 2021. These issues then were very prominent and paramount. Some of them still are. And the point about Project Vulindlela was it was a combined team of the presidency and National Treasury that worked together to drive changes in these five areas through the government bureaucracy. The word Vulindlela means make way or open up. In other words, get out of the way. Remove the constraint, remove the obstacle. That's basically what the word means.
Well, and my little bit of Zulu says, Vula Indlela, open the road, the way.
Well, there you are. There you are. That's a very good description of what it is about.
Point number one was electricity. And that is probably the one area that people know about. But yes. Summarize, where were we with load shedding in 2021?
It's very important to remember that load shedding was the big story. That was the big thing. We had stage six load shedding in 2020. We had load shedding virtually every day. So the first thing that Vulindlela worked on was to try and fix load shedding. And the number of things were done. And today, it's now 2025, we look back and the issue of generating too little power. That is what load shedding is. You generate too little power for the need. That has been resolved. There may be individual areas in the country where municipalities have failed and there's load shedding or load reduction, as it now called, in those areas. But the national problem of not producing enough electricity has been resolved. But something else happened in the process, and that is that the electricity industry was completely deregulated. Electricity used to be a state-run monopoly, run by Eskom. It's a system that developed over many, many decades. It served the country well until about 10, 15 years ago. And the rest of the world has moved on to deregulated electricity markets in one way or another. And with this crisis of load shedding that we had in South Africa, we've taken, Vulindlela has taken the gap to not just solve the load shedding problem, but to reorganize, deregulate electricity. And I think it's important to do that just to understand how far this has gone. We have the example of Richards Bay Minerals. In Richards Bay, on the eastern side of the country, they are now it's a smelter. A smelter uses a lot of electricity constantly. They now buy 70% of their electricity from solar and wind producers in the Western Cape. And then the electrons are sent across the country to the eastern part, to Richards Bay, and they run a smelter on it. Not exclusively, as I've said, 70% of their power. But, and this is the other important point, they buy that power, they say, at about 70% of the tariff that Eskom charges. So that's how far this thing has developed. Just in the last 2 weeks or so, we heard about Glencore, international mining company, who run coal mines in South Africa. They have now signed an agreement to buy renewable energy from solar and wind to run a coal mine. Just think of the irony of that. Now, these things were completely impossible 3 years ago, 4 years ago. Couldn't happen. The law was against it. The law has been changed. The regulations have been changed. And a completely new dispensation is evolving. Now, obviously, vested interest in the old dispensation like Eskom are not keen. And they're trying to resist and they're trying to protect their position. Everybody will do that. But it's quite clear which way the trend is going. And the trend is away from certainly a government monopoly, to private sector, private enterprise producing and selling electricity. And the subsequent trend is away from coal to produce electricity to other sources of energy, like solar and wind and so on. It's quite a magnificent change that's happening in our country. And electricity is such an important basic network industry. If things go wrong there, it really circles out. If things go right there, you have the opposite kind of positive consequences.
It also strikes me that there's been a mind shift, almost a national mind shift, that we no longer think that this is weird.
That's a very important point that you're picking up on, because we grew up, you and me and our generation, we grew up with state monopolies in certain areas. Electricity was one, but also in logistics.
Well, you call it a state monopoly, but from the recipient's point of view, it was simply the state provides.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And that has now been broken and is being broken. Look, it's a journey. We must accept that. It's not happening overnight, but there's no question about the change. There's no question about the direction. There's no question about where we're going. And that is Project Vulindlela.
Number two on their list was spectrum release. And I think we as the users don't really notice what happened there.
No, absolutely. Spectrum release was on the agenda, was supposed to be done, and was delayed for 10 years. Why was it delayed? Well, first, there were lots of political wranglings, particularly in the time of the Zuma administration. And then when Ramaphosa took over and the politics were sorted out, there were court challenges. And so we had this ironical thing that virtually everybody, 3-4 companies, went to the High Court to say that the conditions of spectrum release, you know, are not fair to them. And that was all resolved. And after the delay of 10 years, a spectrum auction took place in, I think it was in March 2022, yes. And that spectrum auction realized 14.5 billion rand for the government fiscus, money which had obviously welcome. Now, for the fiscus, but the real point for you and me is now that spectrum that was released could now be used to introduce 4G and 5G. And if you now go across the country, you know, 5G is very available. Certainly 4G is, and we've moved on from 2 and 3G where we were. In fact, I think there's an effort going on by the telcos to close down 2G and 3G stations. They, you know, the public has moved on. So all this is possible. 4G and 5G, which will be with us for forever, has been made possible because of digital spectrum release. And that was one of the first wins or victories that Vulindlela registered. And we've now forgotten about it. But spectrum release was certainly a big story.
Number three on their list is water. Has anything shifted? Because once again, from the point of the consumer, it looks a bit dire.
Absolutely. And yes, things, to answer your question, yes, things have shifted. Number one, the Zuma administration in its time abolished or suspended a water and sanitation measuring system known as blue drop, green drop, or no drop. The logic was probably, if you don't know about a problem, the problem doesn't exist. This was brought back by the Ramaphosa administration. Those reports, we've now had the first versions of those reports, and obviously they make for dire reading because the water and sanitation and loss problem, that's where the no drop comes in, losses are quite high, and we know there's a problem, but now at least we know it. And what you measure, what you know, you can manage. That's the first one. The second thing is we now have 11 projects going on countrywide, a tune of about 156 billion rand to have bigger bulk water supply. So you start at the top, you aggregate water, you have bulk water supply, and now you must distribute it to various municipalities and so on. So our problem now lies with distribution by municipalities. They were saying, we didn't know what was going on, so you started measuring. Then you worked on bulk water that is now in process and being fixed. Now you've got distribution by municipalities, which is currently the big problem. And there are two interesting initiatives going on. The first one is to ring fence water, also electricity, but let's talk about water, to ring fence water activities inside municipalities as a separate utility. so that the money that comes in from water is put back into water, into maintenance, into infrastructure, into proper billing, that sort of thing. This is what Vulindlela is now working on, is the ring fencing of water supply.
Because previously that money has been used to pay other salaries.
Absolutely. It went into the general income of a municipality and it was spent on general expenses. And we know that municipalities overspend on things like salaries, obviously patronage, that sort of thing. And this will help to curb that. The second change that has taken place, and I think it's a big one, again, it will take time, is to distinguish in a municipality between the constitutional obligations of a municipality to be a water service authority. What is a water service authority? They must make sure that the citizens in their area are serviced, that they are not overcharged, that the poor gets their proper share, and so on and so forth. But you separate those obligations from being a water service provider. The provider is the one that must lay the pipes, make sure they work, issue bills, collect the money, and so on.
Do the actual work.
Do the actual work. Now, in South Africa, the 250-odd municipalities we have do both. They are the water service authority, but they're also a water service provider. There are only two exceptions to that. And the one is the Dolphin Coast, on the Dolphin Coast in KwaZulu-Natal. And the other one is in Mpumalanga, in Mpumalanga. There, they've already separated the delivery of water from the responsibility for water. The one is a political function, the other one is a management function. So the idea is to bring that across the whole country. Now, obviously, municipalities don't like this. Obviously, they will resist it. But obviously they will have to come along because there's a fiscal crisis developing around municipalities not paying for water. And it, again, it's quite clear in which way the direction is. And that's an important follow-up work that Vulindlela is doing now. Now, obviously you can't tackle 250-odd municipalities simultaneously. So Vulindlela is now focusing on 6 of the country's 8 metros to help them to get their water function re-established, ring-fenced with proper management and running it. It also, with the separation of water authorities and water providers, there's also a licensing regime that is brought in with standards that must be met by the provider. And if the provider doesn't meet those standards, their license can get cancelled and can be given to somebody else. So you can take the license away from a municipality as a water provider and give it to a private company or a not-for-profit NGO or a community-based organization. These changes are now possible. The Water Act is being amended to make that possible.
Point number 4 on the Vulindlela list, freight transport, rail and ports. We hear quite a lot about that, but how far is the process?
Let's separate railways from ports. Again, the organizing principle is that you want to bring in private companies on running certain railway lines, railway sectors, and also private companies to run ports. On the railway side, after a long period of delay and preparatory work that had to be done, you must remember, Ruda, we've had the government run rail services for the best part of 150 years. So you now have to change that whole system, and you have to take out the inherent conflicts of interest. You cannot expect the private sector to come in and run a particular railway line if they are not sufficiently protected and independent from Transnet unfair competition. So you had to establish a railway regulator. You had to break Transnet railways up between an asset manager and an operating company. These kinds of preparatory works take time. They require legislative changes, accounting changes, and so on. But that has now progressed to the point where 11 sectors have been put up for bidding by the private sector. More than 50 companies applied. Some 25 were selected. And those 25 are now negotiating with Transnet, with the infrastructure manager, to lease these railway lines, what the conditions will be, who will take what responsibility, where the risk will lie, and so on. And what will happen, which is busy happening, these companies interested in doing the business will either rent railway stock from Transnet or they will bring in new stock from overseas. Apparently, a contract has been signed to bring rolling stock in from Australia. So the companies will bring their rolling stock. They will pay a fee. The fee will go into infrastructure and investment, and and that way you want to resuscitate the railway system. With that, a second tender has been put out by Transnet for railway sidings to be taken over by private operators, private people, to run the sidings. Now, you know, if you go through the country, we see a sorry sight of a lot of sidings that have been just dilapidated and neglected. So it's an effort to turn that around. Because efficient sidings mean you can park trains, let other trains park, you can offload cargo. It makes for more flexibility in the system. That's why you have them in the first place. And the fact that they went to rack and ruin actually undermines the operation of the entire system.
So many little blocks that go into building this tower, huh?
And I think that's a very important point. It is not, you can't just do a big bang. It's not like just abolishing prices or abolishing exchange control. That's a big bang. You can do it one night, government gazette, done. Here you have to move a lot of small parts and bring them all aligned. And that's happening. So some people say it's happening too slow. That may be. But, you must work with what you have. Just before we leave the railway lines, it's not part of Vulindlela, but Praza is also recording some interesting progress. And I think, you know, our listeners must just take note of that. In a future research piece, we may deal with that. So those are the railway lines. What's happening on ports is similar logic. Bring the private sector in. Now, the big one was Durban Pier 2. That's South Africa's largest harbor. Transnet has given a concession to a Philippine company to run it. Well, first there was a bidding process. It was given to a Philippine company, one of the biggest port operators in the world. One of the companies that lost, I think Maersk, then took the case to the High Court. And that's caused a two-year delay. Now, you know, in the ideal world, you don't want such a delay. You want quick decisions, if possible, no court decisions. But that's how it is. And we now through it. The High Court has ruled in favor of Transnet. The Philippine company can now take control of Durban Harbor and do the investment and train the people. So that has already progressed. But then similar outsourcing tenders have been released for Richards Bay, for the Kucha Harbor in the Eastern Cape, and now also for some activities in the Cape Town Harbor for LNG facilities. We will have to import gas in the near future to supplement our energy supply. The more you do renewables, the more you need gas to even out the intermittency of renewables. But for that, you need gas. And so we will build LNG terminals, and bids for that has gone out. So you can see it's the same story. Open up. Where Transnet used to do everything, open up, let private companies come in, they must bid competitively, and they must bring capital. And I think this is important. Nothing is being privatized. It's the misconception that these things means privatization. What is privatization? It's a change in ownership. There's no change in ownership. Transnet remains the owner of the property. Think of it as a house that you own. You get a new tenant. The tenant comes in and fixes your house. He uses his money to fix your house. And then he still pays rent as well. I mean, how is that not a good deal for the homeowner? But it's also a good deal for the guy who wants accommodation and wants to, maybe a house is not the right example, maybe a...
Well, maybe he rents out the rooms to students.
Maybe he rents out the rooms to students, absolutely. So he can use it to make money. And that's what's happening here.
And then the fifth one on the list, visas and skilled migration.
Yeah, that you know, we all know about the progress that has been made there. The new Minister of Home Affairs has really rattled the cage. I think a lot of that is work that was done by his predecessor, and he was happy. He was lucky enough to reap the rewards. I think one must say that. But the fact is, it's happening, and it's changing the way we're dealing with visas. It's changing the way in which we can accommodate tourists. The work is not completed yet. It will carry on, but the big thing, the big aim is to make it easier for skilled people to come here, make it easier for remote workers to come and work here and service their clients in the US or Europe or wherever. And the third one, of course, is tourism. And if we can get those things right, you can unlock a huge number of jobs and economic growth.
So you summarize this actually under the heading from a developmental state to a partnership state.
Yeah, and what my thinking was there, and you would notice there's a question mark because I think it's not definite, but my thinking is as follows. Since it has come into power, the ANC has worked with the concept of a developmental state. And they basically got it from Southeast Asia, from South Korea, Taiwan, and of course China, who are the prime examples of a developmental state. And the ANC tried to copy that here. I think it's safe to say that we know it didn't work. The idea of a developmental state is that you take a SOE, a government company, government enterprise, and they must drive developmental work. How much developmental work has come out of Eskom? How much has come out of Transnet? How much has come out of our water authorities? How much has come out of our very dysfunctional municipalities? So I think what we're seeing here is a collapse, if I may use that word, of the notion of a developmental state and a move over to a partnership state where you bring people into traditional state functions. You don't privatize, you concession and you liberalize. I think liberalize is a much better word than privatization. And they now coming, private sector players are now coming into areas where the state used to be. And to do that, they have to work together. They have to develop a common understanding of where's risk, where's reward, who's taking responsibility for what. It is a coexistence. It's not a single existence. So I think politically speaking, what we're seeing is a move from developmental state to a partnership state. And that's a very new direction in our politics.
We have a completely new dispensation since last year's election.
Mm.
Did that upset the apple cart?
No, not at all. It reinforced the apple cart. The program that we've discussed in this podcast so far was started by the previous administration, the sixth administration. They launched Volandlela. They launched the 5 years.
And that was basically the ANC. They had a majority. They were governing.
Correct. And so they must get the credit for it, and where people want to blame the blame. The Government of National Unity, first of all, endorsed that. The DA in particular was quite keen on Vulindlela. And the Government of National Unity has now launched Vulindlela 2. What is Vulindlela 2? It is a continuation of the work that is not finished yet from Vulindlela 1, like water, for example, and electricity, the development of electricity market and so on. But the Government of National Unity has added three items to Vulindlela 2. The first one is municipalities, local government. How you fix that, I don't know. That's going to be a very hard nut to crack. But it's there, it's the priority, and they've started working on that. The second one is what is called spatial inequality. The fact that we still have the legacy of group areas, and we have a lot of particularly working class people living very far away from the places of work, which is the opposite of what you find in a normal city, if I can put it that way. So there are concrete things that can be done there. And the most important is suburban transport. In other words, railway lines and bus lines. And in these things are part of the Vulindlela program under the item of spatial inequality. Also release land where it's possible for access by poor people. And then the third one added by the Government of National Unity is a transformation to a digital governance. And the idea is that every citizen must have a digital ID and all interactions with the government is via that digital portal. There are countries using that, and a roadmap must now be developed for South Africa to do that. That's detailed. The point is those three areas, local government, digital, and spatial inequality, have been added by the Government of National Unity to Vulindlela. Vulindlela is now housed in the presidency, and a project team in the presidency is driving the implementation.
Can this make a difference to our dismal growth rate?
Well, that's the whole reason why we're doing it, is to try and improve growth and with that jobs. And the Bureau for Economic Research at Stellenbosch released last year a very important research paper in which they modeled the impact of these changes that Vulindlela is striving for. And the impact is that over a period of 2-3 years, growth can move from 1% now to 3.5% in 2 or 3 years' time. They have since updated their work, and they're more or less sticking with that timeline. So it may take a year or so longer. Trump tariffs, of course, will cause a delay and other things may cause the delay, but there's no doubt about it that the dividend will come through. And that ties up with what we know. You look around the world, when governments embark on structural reform, you get a productivity improvement and then growth. And a classic example is India. India, for many, many years after independence, had a very low growth rate, 1% thereabouts. Then Mohammed Singh became Minister of Finance, and India ran into a big foreign currency crisis and a budget crisis. And he said, well, we can't carry on like this. We've done it now for a couple of decades. And he launched big economic reforms. He then became Prime Minister, Mr. Singh, and carried on with the reforms. He passed away the other day. His government was replaced by the current Modi government, and Modi is pursuing it further, and India's growth rates now are spectacular. So I don't think India ever used the word Project Vilindlela. That was not there, but it's the same kind of thing. You open up the economy. What was called the Raj economy was transformed by Mohammed Singh through structural reform, and that's what's happening here in South Africa now. So yes, you look at India, you look at other countries, when you do structural reform, there's a productivity increase and there's a growth dividend. And that's the way I think this one will play out.
In summary, so what?
The key point about Vulindlela is it's not another policy paper. It's about implementation. And there's a huge difference. So we've had, as I've said in the beginning, several policy papers. This one is about implementation, and we can see from the record that there are actual practical results coming out. So that's one. I think it's important for business people in particular to take note of what's happening with Vulindlela. The fact that in 9 cities and towns across the country, very few people knew about it, I think is perturbing. And taking the trouble to understand more about what's happening will be good for confidence. And let's face it, the smart money is already there. Those entrepreneurs who are tendering for railway lines, who are tendering for contracts in the harbors, in the ports, the people who are investing in 4G and 5G, the smart entrepreneurs are out there. Smart money is out there. Don't be left behind. I think the third so what, as you put it, there's lots of small pieces that must be put together. It's a journey. It's not a big bang. It's not a one-eyed stand, if I can put it that way. This is a long-term marriage that you have to work through. And we must have the patience with that. Then there's the point that I think we are moving from a developmental state to a partnership state. I really think that's in progress. Now, of course, the politicos will argue about this and so on. ANC stalwarts will say, no, the state must remain in control. And on the other side, right-wingers will say everything must be privatized. Leave that aside. For the big majority of people in the middle, I think this shift from developmental to partnership is a shift that fits in with the mood in the country. It fits in with the GNU. And I think that's the way the country is moving, from developmental to partnership.
Thank you very much. Most interesting.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the So What podcast. If you enjoy this content, please don't forget to leave a review and a rating, and please consider subscribing so you don't miss any future episodes. Also, tell your friends. Remember, you can find a written version of all JP's content at jplandman.co.za.